Thanks, Cliff. So I came to the Fertilizer Institute about 5.5 years ago now from doing manure management and nutrient management out of the Ag and Biosystems Engineering Department at Iowa State. But, you know, if you do manure management work, you end up doing nutrient management work, and TFI brought me on to really build an extension and outreach program for the fertilizer industry on our industry's nutrient stewardship efforts. I really appreciated the remarks that Rob Norton made in front of my talk, because some of the challenges he was talking about with the Great Barrier Reef are really analogous and similar to some of the challenges that we have with Western Lake Erie Basin and the algal bloom in the Mississippi River Basin and various other environmental challenges that we have in the United States. So when I came on to develop an outreach and extension program, we know that the industry as a whole, which has many sectors, right? So when you look at fertilizer, we've got producers and manufacturers, we've got wholesalers, we've got retailers, agronomic service providers, and then the information that you all in academia and other folks bring to the table, that we need to move along in a form of continuous improvement so that we are working towards the same goal, essentially, of reducing our environmental impacts, increasing our sustainability and profitability. And so as I have worked within building that extension and outreach program within TFI and working with my partners at the Fertilizers Canada and the International Plant Nutrition Institute and the many stakeholders we engage, we really need to have a way to not only benchmark, but show ourselves and the folks that we work with that we're striving for that improvement. And so about a year and a half ago, several of us in the industry got together to start thinking about how we show that and what we actually really want to work towards. And so I'm going to present on a piece of that today. So where you've heard Rob speak about the outcome or the impacts of some of the things that are linked to fertilizer use, and Tom's going to touch on those as well, my focus is more on how we challenge or look to see what the industry's doing, and then how we start thinking about measuring the actions on the ground to move towards that outcome of addressing sustainability or reducing the hypoxic bloom or addressing the algal bloom, because we know those things are very long term, right? We can do something this year and it's not going to have an effect next year, right? Those are long term goals, and so we need to be able to check ourselves and make sure that we're still moving in the right direction. And so I want to talk about some of the things that are driving us towards that, some of the things that we're doing to evaluate ourselves and the industry and where we are, as well as how we have some ideas about how we might measure the process of going there. So when you think about nutrient use and the sphere around nutrient use, at least on the ground with a grower, there are many things to think about, from the grower's profitability and return on investment, yields, productivity, soil health, weather, logistics on making things happen on the ground, the labor requirements. There's a lot for those that are close to the ground with the grower that you work on in that sphere. Well, for TFI and many of those of us who work more in the policy realm, we work in a different sphere. So what happens with the grower is really important, but it's equally important some of the other things that are happening, whether it be food supply chain sustainability, local issues like addressing the area of concern around the Western Lake Erie Basin, some of the litigation that's going on right now, for example, in the Des Moines area where we have the lawsuit against some of the drainage districts. Climate change, we've got COP21 coming up, and Climate Smart Ag is a big piece. So how do we work with the stakeholders that are engaged in that space and ensure that we are moving the industry or the use of fertilizer in the right direction? Because as Allison noted earlier, you know, when you hear an issue tied to policy, when you see something on social media about the algal bloom or the taps being turned off or the size of the hypoxic bloom or you know, the nitrate levels being higher in groundwater, it's really linked somewhat to fertilizer. And so we as an industry need to have a way to assess that and be able to talk about what we're doing. So really specifically, and I'm just going to go through some of these, because I think if you're not in maybe the policy or national realm that some of us are in, maybe you're not aware of all the things that are actually affecting us right now. If you're in the Mississippi River Basin, or you've been engaging with the hypoxic task force, or maybe if you're following some of the EPA policies, you've probably heard of nutrient reduction strategies, right? So there's states that are up and down the Mississippi River Basin implementing nutrient reduction strategies for point and non-point source, and practices that growers can be working on, both conservation and fertilizer and point source practices that folks can be working on to get at reducing that nutrient loss into the surface water or groundwater systems. And so how do we, as an industry, what's our role in that? So what's the role of the fertilizer industry in those nutrient reduction standard strategies? I think we do have a role to play, and I think we need to be able to measure that. Addressing local water quality concerns. So you look at Western Lake Erie Basin. We have a few fertilizer industry members that are right in Toledo, right where they turned the taps off last year. What's the role of our industry that's right there at the mouth of where the Maumee empties into the Western Lake Erie Basin? How do we measure what we're doing to be a positive piece of that outcome? Food supply chain sustainability, I won't say too much there. Allison spoke about those efforts this morning, but clearly fertilizer has a role within food supply chain sustainability. And when I say fertilizer, I'm really thinking about the whole industry and all the sectors. Climate smart agriculture, I don't know if people are familiar with that term, but climate smart agriculture is essentially looking at addressing mitigation, productivity, and resilience for agriculture around climate change. And so within the U.S. right now, we're just getting ready to provide a commitment to COP21, or the community of parties, I think it is, for the Paris talks, where we're going to be making a commitment to greenhouse gas emission reduction over the next several years. And so that has a linkage that we need to work with. And then the same, just as a whole, improving our service to our customers. So we thought about, and some of these terms you've seen, perhaps the outcome and action-based metrics, but for the industry, we have folks in the industry, our producers and manufacturers, let's say. They don't work directly with growers, but clearly they have efforts that support getting nutrient stewardship on the ground. They have efforts that support addressing the hypoxic zone. They have efforts that support Western Lake Erie Basin and climate change. And so how do we evaluate or engage them in a way that they do continue to support it, or that they increase their support in those areas? And the same would go for our retail community or our certified crop advisors, right? They clearly have things that they do in support. And so for us, I've labeled it enabler, but maybe you can think of it as actions that are in support of nutrient stewardship. So how do we measure what we are as an industry doing to help move to that intended outcome that we have of improved or benefits or reduced impact of fertilizer in the environment? The action piece, to me, the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges we have, we don't ultimately control, so as an industry, we don't ultimately control what the grower does, right? So fertilizer use, let's say, in Western Lake Erie Basin can be a challenge. So the algal bloom is a challenge. Runoff of nutrients is a challenge. But we don't control what the grower really ultimately decides to do. We can make recommendations. We can set everything up for them to do it right. But if they ultimately choose to broadcast apply on frozen ground, even against our better recommendations, that's not something that we can control. But we do need to be able to measure what we're doing to work towards that. And ultimately, we need to start thinking about measuring what growers are doing right. Because we know that if growers make those decisions today or this year, whether it be for conservation or fertilizer best management practices, we're not going to get that outcome change maybe for years to come. So thinking about how we have metrics in place to address what we're doing now and ensure that we're moving in the right direction. So today I'm going to talk about enablers and actions, and then Tom's going to follow up to talk a little bit about outcomes. So if you look at the column on, I guess, the left on these screens, that outcome-based piece, those are the ones that I'm talking about that we're not going to change quickly, right? So Tom's going to talk more about those, but we can't move the needle on those quickly. we can move the needle a little bit more quickly on practices that are happening on the ground. That's that center section on action or adoption metrics. And specifically, I'm going to talk about the category of cropland under 4R or acres under 4R adoption or something in that, however you want to term it. And then the other piece is the enabler section. So we want to get to actions on the ground, but how do we ensure that the arena is set for those actions to take place? And that's really, do we have extension and professionals in place? Do we have the infrastructure we need? Do we have the transportation we need? Do we have the warehouses we need? Is the research in place? Is the industry supporting enough research to address the innovation that's needed? And are we engaging with all the stakeholders in that space? To me, those are the things that, as a whole, the industry can be doing to move towards adoption of practice on the ground or implementation on the ground to move towards those outcomes. So the industry this year, and I'm sorry this is a little small for you, but I'll highlight the pieces I want to, the takeaway from it. So the industry, our board of directors, the Fertilizer Institute board of directors this year, approved taking on a pilot state of the industry report. So think about it as an industry-wide sustainability report, if you want to. And we have 50 members that are participating in the pilot this year. And so we came together and we said, what are the things that we want to measure continuous improvement on as an industry? And what are the challenges that we have? And what do our stakeholders want to know about what we're doing to address some of these challenges? So the industry developed a set of 21 metrics that address economic and societal benefits, nutrient stewardship, operations and transportation, and then some other topics around security that we know we need to focus on as well. So within the economic and societal benefits and the operation and transportation, probably the components there are much fairly similar to what you might find in company sustainability reporting. So maybe you're talking about wastewater reclamation or greenhouse gas emissions from the operation side or energy use from the operation side. But for now, let's focus on the nutrient stewardship component. So with regard to nutrient stewardship, we have asked our companies to report on, you know, a demonstrated knowledge of agronomy for implementing with customers. In field for our implementation, so that's one that we are struggling a little bit to figure out what the best way is to do that, but I'm going to present on some options here. Leveraging engagement with partners, and so doing a good job of accounting for and acknowledging the partners that we are using. We know enhanced efficiency fertilizers are a big piece of nutrient stewardship implementation in the field. Research, and then also our impact on food production, as well as transportation, which actually shows up in the transportation field. So looking at how all the different modes that we are moving it and the volumes that we're having to move and the issues with that. So what we did, and I'll just give you a couple of examples, is if you want to have a metric, you have to have a definition for that, right? So we looked at agronomic professionals and noting that within the fertilizer industry, and let's say specifically within retailers on the ground, we have folks that are certified and we have folks that are not certified, but that doesn't mean they don't have agronomic knowledge. And so we basically prepared definitions such that we're asking people to report on the number of employees providing agronomic services and information as part of their regular job duties. So folks who are employed within the industry with knowledge of agronomy and are providing those services. And then we're also asking for folks to report their number of employees that are either CCAs or a certified professional agronomist. With the new 4R specialty certification, which some of you may or may not be aware of, we'll start tracking those numbers as well. So we feel like that's a way to track the industry's knowledge of being able to implement nutrient stewardship on the ground and the services we provide growers. We also know it's equally important to talk about outreach. Outreach is a big piece of what we do in the industry and is a big piece of getting growers to make practice change. And so we've defined, at least for this year within our pilot report, identifying the NGOs and research groups that our member companies engage on nutrient stewardship, and then providing some examples of what those engagements look like. Because remember, it's all in terms of working towards continuous improvement, and can we provide examples for maybe some companies that aren't doing things that maybe would encourage them to get more engaged. I also want to say a little bit about adoption in the field, so kind of the action of implementing the four R's and how we get at those numbers. So for the industry, it's really important, and I think not only for the industry, but for the stakeholders we work with, it's really important to understand what's happening on the ground so that we can begin to estimate or understand the outcome that we're looking for. So are we doing the right things on the ground to get towards reversing the trend on the hypoxic bloom in the Gulf, right? So are we doing the right things to get there? We need to be able to understand the trends for current practices. We need to understand, you know, maybe we can focus our efforts in key geographies. So for us, do we need to worry so much about surface water issues in Arizona? All right, so maybe groundwater quantity issues are a challenge there. But from a surface water standpoint, some of our, you know, focus areas are where we have our biggest concerns with algal blooms and things leading to the Mississippi River Basin, and, you know, maybe where we have nutrient imbalances on the Chesapeake Bay. So there could be geographies that we choose to focus on initially. We'd like to be able to forecast the impacts of 4Rs. That's a question that comes up frequently when we're engaging with stakeholders. And so there are many options to consider to get there. And a couple of examples now of ways that people are doing this. So within the Western Lake Erie Basin, there is a group that came together to create a 4R certification program. It is for retailers who are working with growers to implement practices. It's actually for retailers and agronomic service providers, recognizing that some of those are independent folks that work with growers, not necessarily selling product as well. And so the industry, about 3.5 years ago, came together along with many partners, including the Nature Conservancy, Environmental Defense Fund, the Ohio EPA, the DNR, the Corn Growers, the Farm Bureau, a whole host of folks came together and said, what practices do we think we should be doing? And I should also say Heidelberg University and Ohio State University and Michigan State University came together and said, what do we need to be doing to address the big issues that we have, which is really dissolved phosphorus loss into Western Lake Erie. And so what you see there is a set of practices that were agreed to as recommendations that agronomic service providers should be making specific to fertilizer use. So we're not talking about conservation on the ground, very key to addressing the Western Lake Erie issue. Some of the edge of field and downstream stuff that is taking place, very important. But when you look at our retailers and service providers, they're providing 4R-based practices. And so these are the recommended practices that were developed by this group. And so they created an audit program, a certification program, if you will, for retailers in the area. So one of the ways that they're accounting for what's happening in the field is by the number of acres that those audited retailers are touching. So if you're a certified retailer, there are currently 21 certified locations in Western Lake Erie Basin. You've been audited by a third party to show through your records of work with growers that you are making that set of recommendations that we just showed. And so currently, those 21 branch locations touch a total of 1.4 million acres in that watershed. They're serving a total of in that area. There's actually 956,000 acres within the Western Lake Erie Basin. There are another 400,000 in the vicinity around that. Within the Western Lake Erie Basin, they're servicing 2,200 farmers, so they're making that set of recommendations to 2,200 farmers. And then in the whole program, they're making recommendations to 3,600 farmers. Now, that's from the 21 current locations that are certified, but there are an additional 50 branch locations that have committed to being certified. They're just still in the auditing process. So that's one way of accounting for practice adoption on the field with growers, right? So we don't want to provide individual grower information, but we want to be able to track what our retailers are doing with growers. And so we have a set of practices or recommendations that are being made, and then they're getting information from those retailers about how many acres and how many clients they're touching and making those recommendations on. So that's one example. A second example is in Illinois. So Illinois, several years ago, you may have heard of Keep It for the Crop, is an effort that was initiated by not only the Illinois Fertilizer Chemical Association, but many of their Farm Bureau, corn, soy, and other partners. The NREC effort there was created as a modification to their fertilizer tonnage tax. So they're now collecting, I think it's at 75 cents a ton right now for a research and education program. So between those groups, the way that they're currently looking at assessing practice change on the ground is through using a software that many of the retailers in Illinois, now this is really specific to Illinois, about 90% of the retailers use the same inventory and billing software, and it's something called SSI AgVance. That's not the case in many of our states, but in Illinois, about 90% of the retailers use this same software. And so what they're doing is they've worked with SSI and AgVance to modify the algorithm a little bit so that it allows them to aggregate data on what it is they're working with their growers on. And they're collecting that information from 8 priority watersheds that the group identified in partnership with the Illinois EPA. They basically identified the 8 priority areas, and they're beginning to collect that information. They're also looking at other ways to get information. So within that AgVance software, really they can only collect information on what's being billed for, because that's how the software works. So that's related to fertilizer sales, nitrogen stabilizers, the timing of the sales, and other information. So they're looking to see what all they can glean from that bit of the software. But they're also looking at other ways to track trends. So, for example, right now, as I'll show on my next slide, there's a movement towards in-season application or post-emergence application in Illinois. And so they're looking at doing a survey with the equipment providers in the state to see if they can track some of the application equipment sales trends, because, you know, clearly if more post-emergence application equipment is being sold, then that would be an indication that more post-emergence application is taking place. So these are numbers that I just actually got from Gene Payne, who's the executive director at the Illinois Fertilizer Chemical Association. And so what you're seeing, she told me that really 2008 was when they initially started encouraging folks to move from fall to spring application. And we're not going to see a 100% shift, but they're working towards a 50% shift. And that would be that instead of doing 100% of your application in the fall, nitrogen, you do 50% of your application in the fall, and part of what you do in the spring, you do both with a nitrogen stabilizer. The bulk of fertilizer sold in Illinois is anhydrous ammonia, so that's their main focus. So what you see is basically a shift starting to occur, so you see a second peak that's occurring in that April, March-April time frame, which means that you're no longer seeing a sole peak, which is what it really used to look like prior to this. The sole peak was in the fall. For the last 3 years, the average tons sold in the spring have been greater than the average tons sold in the fall, so there's another indication that that shift is occurring. And then you see the continuous increase in nitrogen stabilizer use within Illinois, so another indication that we are getting growers to shift to some of the recommended practice changes. Another way that we can look at fertilizer practice change in the field is linked to the field print calculator. So as the field print calculator continues to expand, you know, there are goals of, I don't remember the current goal, but there are significant numbers of acres that is a goal to account for practices for growers. And so within the metrics, greenhouse, as you heard Allison indicate, greenhouse gas and water quality are two metrics that are very closely linked to fertilizer use. And so there's another potential data set that can be gleaned to look to see what growers are doing with regard to practice change. And then finally, in Iowa, there's a new effort. So with regard to the nutrient reduction strategy in Iowa, one of the ways that they're looking at getting information is just surveying retailers. So they're working with Iowa State to figure out how to statistically survey retailers to, again, have retailers pull information about what they're doing on the ground with growers as a way to aggregate practice change information. And that actually is going to be very interesting to follow, because they're looking at using that survey through retailers not only to collect fertilizer BMP information, but also conservation, cover crop, tillage, and other practice information. And that'll remain to be seen how well they'll be able to do that through the retailer, because in some cases that's going to mean the retailer will have had to have been out on that farm to be able to indicate, acres under cover crop or acres under buffers or grass waterways. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But I think it provides another option for us to consider when we're looking at basically understanding metrics of adoption. And then I think another thing that we can't forget is USDA's statistics service, so NASS. And many of you all know that they have a variety of surveys that go out to our growers to collect information on practice change, and really specifically to fertilizer use. There are questions that ERS, the Economic Research Service, ask about fertilizer practice change. There are questions that SEEP, that's the NRCS's Conservation Effectiveness Assessment Program, collect data points on. And there are questionnaires that they are open to taking change on. So they are not set on the set of questions. They want to have the best set of questions available to them. And so we're in the process of looking at the questions that they're asking to see if there are any modifications we might like to better collect data. I'll just refer one more time to the U.S. COP21 commitments, because I think it's really interesting. Right now, I'm going to try and get the number correct, but I think the U.S. is making USDA's commitment to COP21 is somewhere in the 126 or 106 million metric tons annually is the absolute reduction that the U.S. is committed to. And when you look at U.S.'s agricultural commitment to greenhouse gas reduction, how are they going to track that? How are they going to document that? And so we've been having some conversations with the folks in the Climate Change Office about the linkage of that reduction to fertilizer and how we make sure that the surveys that they're doing are asking the right questions so that we can accurately reflect or accurately model the reduction through the fertilizer practice change. So I think there's another opportunity yet there to look at aggregated data. And so all those together give us potential ways to look at action change on the ground, as well as the really important piece, which is looking at if the industry is working towards continuous improvement.
Thank you, Laura.